What do we make of the March for Our Lives this Saturday? Is this good, a protest against gun violence, or is it just more of the radical left?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, so there's a large march, demonstrations in different cities, the March for Life this Saturday, March for Our Lives, I should say, and certainly in distinction from the March for Life, the annual pro-life march in D.C. A lot of people there, massive media coverage, celebrities there backing it. How should we respond? Is this something good? Is this something positive? Young people leading the way, young people saying enough is enough. We've had it with all the violence. We've had it with all the access to guns. We've had it with the gun culture. We've had it with the exaltation of the NRA. We've had it with politicians being bought by the gun lobby. We've had it. It's our blood on the line. Enough is enough. Or should we look at this as more of the radical left coming together, helping organize, helping sponsor, helping fund, whatever the case may be, and the actual issues not really being discussed? How can we best save the most lives without violating our fundamental rights? This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire, or you are watching The Line of Fire on YouTube or Facebook. And you will not get a particular political slant here. My goal is not to be right-wing or left-wing. My goal is not to be conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat. My goal is to do my best and to help us do our best to step back, look at things scripturally, reflect, ask some honest questions, and get past the emotion and the media frenzy surrounding these sensitive issues about guns, gun violence, gun control. What's your take? Were you pleased to see this? Maybe you're a young person and you're tuning in today and you say, yeah, this is awesome, young people leading the way. Or did you cringe through some of it or through some of the speeches? Or do you see this as partisan politics? Do you see this as moving towards any kind of positive solution? 866-348-7884. What is your take on this? I'm going to look at it from a number of different angles. I wrote an article also that we'll get into a little later in the broadcast, why I was not enthusiastic about the event, why I was not enthusiastic about the March for Our Lives. A colleague sent me a note on Facebook, private message, asking me if I'm going to be writing positive articles about this. After all, it's a pro-life event. Well, was it really a pro-life event? I would gladly be enthusiastic about young people taking a stand. I would gladly be enthusiastic about our culture coming together against gun violence. But I have many reservations because of the content of what was talked about and the nature of what is behind some of these rallies and movements. All right, let's start here. David Hogg, 17, 18-year-old young person, one of the survivors from the horrible massacre in Parkland, Florida, Stoneman Douglas High School, and he has become a major poster boy, and we'll hear from him in a little while. He's become a major poster boy of the anti-gun movement and the call to get guns out of the hands of people throughout the country so there can be less gun violence. And he tweeted something out that I agree with, all right? He tweeted something out, and he said this: can we please not debate this as Democrats and Republicans, but discuss this as Americans? In the comments, if you see someone you disagree with, do not attack each other. Talk to one another. This applies to me, too. In caps, we must work together to save our future. Oh, absolutely. You know, if you've listened to The Line of Fire regularly, that I don't talk a lot about guns, gun control. You know that I'm the son of a New York City Jewish lawyer, that I didn't grow up in a gun culture, meaning hunting regularly or owning a gun. I've only fired a firearm to my memory twice in my lifetime. So it's not like I am a card-carrying member of the NRA, nor am I marching down the street with the radical left. This is an issue that I can step back from and in more ways than most issues be fairly dispassionate about and critique what I see on the right and on the left because I have less of a personal dog in this fight. So what I've been calling for, the few articles I've written, my most recent article, is can we sit down together, regardless of our political viewpoints, regardless of our own point of view, and say, right, let's talk constructively. We recognize, do we not? We recognize that we have a problem with gun violence in America. The question is, what is the root of the problem, or what are the roots of the problem, and how do we go about solving the problem? I think every civil-minded person in America agrees that we should have less gun violence, that we want to have less gun violence. The question is, what can lead to that? Is it a larger cultural issue? Is it an issue of fatherlessness in homes? Is it an issue of improper law enforcement? Is it an issue of weapons getting into the hands of people that shouldn't get into the hands of people? Is it an issue of certain weapons no one should be able to get to? How do we address this? What are the problems? What are the solutions? Certainly, we're talking about a bloodbath in America. And by the way, the greatest bloodbath is not in our schools, as tragic as that is, but it's in our inner cities. It's taking place on a regular basis outside of schools. When we have a horrific tragedy like Parkland, it gets our attention. But the question is, how can we address the violence in our culture? Some have said that when you rate America in terms of gun violence against countries in the rest of the world, we're pretty high up on the list. But when you take out a few key cities, a few of our biggest cities with strict gun control laws and yet a steady bloodbath, when you take out those cities, we go way, way, way down on the list of gun violence. How do we address this? So I agree with what this young man, David Hogg, tweeted out. But when you hear him actually speak, you do not just hear an appeal to rational interaction. You hear an angry, emotional appeal. One article about this young man said this: David Hogg is mad as hell. That's the graphic with the article. David Hogg, mad as hell. After surviving a school shooting, Hogg and his classmates have become some of the leading, if unlikely, voices on gun reform. And the graphic for the article, I mean, it's got him red-faced and you know, it's a very graphic picture. And that's what's coming from. Now, please understand me. He's a young man. We'll talk about that later in the broadcast. Should we be looking to the youth to lead the way, or the young people the least qualified to lead the way on this? We'll discuss that. Well, I'm 63 years old. Our oldest granddaughter is 17. I'm constantly pouring into college-age young people and esteem God's work in their lives. I love to see young people getting active and having a cause and giving themselves to it. So in and of itself, if a 15-year-old becomes a national celebrity and has a message we need to hear, great, so be it. But let's listen to David Hogg speaking at the March for Our Lives. This is what he had to say on Saturday. Do we have it?
When people try to suppress your vote, and there are people who stand against you because you are too young, we say no more. When politicians say that your voice doesn't matter because the NRA owns them, we say no more. When politicians send their thoughts and prayers with no action, we say no more. And to those politicians supported by the NRA that allow the continued slaughter of our children and our future, I say get your resumes ready.
Now, I want to say candidly that I thank God from the bottom of my heart that he did not give me a national platform when I was 17 or 18 years old. I thank God that he did not allow me to speak to hundreds of thousands or millions of people at that time. Now, look, I was active. 16 years old in my drug days, I helped lead a protest in our high school that won us the rights to have our own program. And in this program, the classes were pretty much whatever we wanted. It was called Safe School, Student and Faculty Education. And that's how I spent the last 2 years of high school with, well, how can I describe it? If you asked for a passing grade and didn't show up the whole semester, you'd get it. It was as free-form, quote, education as you can imagine. But we thought that was the better way. And we were rebelling against the educational system as we saw it. We had a better way. That's what we thought. So I was 16 years old, and then I get radically saved. You better believe I had a message for the whole world to repent and believe in Jesus. And I had a light high school schedule because of the Safe School program. So I read the word and prayed and shared the gospel literally day and night. But I'm quite thankful that God, and I started preaching at the age of 18. I'd read through the Bible cover to cover 5 times at that point and memorized like 4,000 verses in the previous 6-8 months. Yeah, but I'm thankful to God that he allowed me to preach to a few people then and not to hundreds of thousands and millions. And there's a reason for that. It takes a while to grow and mature. And when you hear rhetoric like this, that the NRA is responsible for the slaughter of children, that you actually think that lawful gun owners are sitting back thinking, awesome, more kids getting slaughtered. And that for your average gun owner, the last thing on their mind is gun violence. And in fact, many of them are armed to protect their families against gun violence. And when mass shooters are going to go and carry out their dastardly deeds, they're not only looking for what is a gun-free zone to go into to minimize their chance of getting cut down. So you hear this kind of rhetoric and you think all it is stirring up emotion. It is not constructive. It is demonizing of others. Look, when there are people passionately crusading against our current gun control laws, I don't just assume they're doing it because they want average Americans to lose their ability to defend themselves or because they're part of some plot to take all the weapons away from law-abiding Americans. No, I give people the benefit of the doubt in terms of their motivation. That being said, when I hear rhetoric like this, it is utterly unhelpful. Oh, there's more. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome back.
And there are people who stand against you because you're too young. We say no more. When politicians say that.
That was Jennifer Hudson at the March for Our Lives DC Choir. Sorry, we had a few other images and sounds there just all coming up at once from the March for Our Lives. Listen, I stand with those who say we've got to do something about the plague of gun violence in America, from the massacres in our schools to the killing of our kids in the inner city. We've got to do something about it. I appreciate people making their voices heard. I appreciate people saying we're not going to stand on the sidelines. We've got to do something. I appreciate people coming together and saying, what can we do to address the problem? I do not appreciate when it becomes partisan politics. I do not appreciate when it becomes an anti-Trump rally. I do not appreciate it when useless emotion-filled rhetoric is used to demonize opponents. And again, I am not a card-carrying member of the NRA, all right? this is not where I'm coming from. Politically, I've voted Republican for our last few presidential elections, but I'm a registered independent. It simply reflects my mindset that I'm not putting my trust in a political party or an individual. And can we all agree, regardless of where you're coming from, if you voted for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or set out the election, if you identify as Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, whoever you are, young or old, can we all agree that we would love to see a reduction in gun violence in America? Now, we know the highest level of gun violence is simply suicide, all right? And it's going to be difficult to stop people from taking their own lives, all right? And getting guns out of their hands, that's not the solution to the suicide problem. We've got to try to help people and from the inside out in other ways and look at the causes of suicide. That's a whole other issue. But let's just stop and process this particular situation for a moment. Can we do that rationally? The massacre in the Parkland, Florida high school, which was like the straw that broke the camel's back and launched this national movement, certainly with the help of adults working with these young people, certainly with some funding from other organizations working with these young people. And when you've got various celebrities showing up at an event, you know, this is often where the left is going to be. And I wonder, just curious, how many of the celebrities that were present at the March for Our Lives or political leaders from the left that were present at the March for Our Lives or sympathizers in the elite media, Hollywood, the arts, etc. How many of those that were there that are famous public figures have armed bodyguards? Just wondering. There are the videos that circulated a few years ago with Jason Matera going up to Mayor Bloomberg and saying, "Yeah, I'm all with you about getting guns. You know, we got to get the guns out of people's hands in New York. And will your bodyguards disarm?" Of course not. You know, it's like some people say, "How can the Pope speak out against a wall when Vatican City is surrounded by a wall? He's protected by a wall." These are fair questions to ask, aren't they? Aren't they fair questions to ask? But let's think about Parkland for a moment. This is not the situation. This is not the school situation based on which you say we need better gun laws. Because if our current laws were enforced, Nicholas Cruz would not have had weapons. It's that simple. The FBI has had to say they're sorry. Broward County blew it badly. I mean, with multiple calls to the same house reportedly and complaints about violent acts or threats, and then people calling the FBI and calling local law enforcement saying, "This guy is ready to explode, or you could have a school shooter on your hands." And the kids at the school saying the moment they heard the guns, they knew it had to be this kid, Nicholas Cruz. You had various breakdowns in the system. And then the armed officer on the premise not going in, waiting for other cops to show up before going in. And you could have minimized the casualties. But the bottom line is Nicholas Cruz should never have had a gun in his hands. So let's just think about this for a minute, okay? You have a situation where if the current laws were enforced and if local law enforcement and national law enforcement did its job, the massacre would not have taken place. Nicholas Cruz would not have had a gun in his hand. How then is that the basis for a campaign for new gun laws? That's what troubles me. That's what concerns me. Here, if you just think that this is all nonpartisan, nonpolitical, just young people saying enough is enough, and others rallying together with them, you know, young people leading the way and other Americans rallying with them. If you think that's all that it is, think about this. A little over a week ago, there's a shooting in a Maryland school, right? Another young man goes in there as a shooter. Two people killed, wounded one of them critically. Excuse me, two people shot and wounded one of them critically. And then the young lady tragically dies of her wounds a few days ago. And the reason that you didn't hear about 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 being killed or wounded was because the armed resource officer at the school shot and killed the young man, shot and killed the shooter. Did that prompt a national cry? Did that prompt a national movement? Did that spark a massive media debate about the need to have qualified, trained armed resource officers on every campus? No. Why? Because that is not part of the agenda of the left. That's the issue. Here, look at some of the signs that were featured at this event. There are signs like this. Why is my uterus, why is my uterus more restricted than guns? Okay? There were other signs like that that were pro-abortion signs. Don't make laws about my body. All right? Don't make laws about my body. Make laws about guns. And then others, LGBTQ students against guns. In other words, this was a heavily leftist, anti-Trump, anti-Republican movement. You've just got to understand that. I tweeted this out just a few minutes ago during a break. What does it tell you when the same media that virtually ignored the annual anti-abortion March for Life gave wall-to-wall coverage to the anti-gun March for Our Lives? Some of the responses, sadly, it tells me nothing I didn't already know. Another, presuppositions, bias, agenda. Another, wait, I know this one. Another, it tells me that this outrage at gun law is entirely politically driven by ideologues. It tells me that abortion is not only acceptable to that ideology, but that it is ferociously advocated. Now, some would say, well, pro-life movement is hypocritical because it's also pro-gun. Well, that is a massive generalization. A massive generalization to say that the majority of people in the pro-life movement are pro-gun. Certainly, as constitutional people, they'd be Second Amendment people. But I have never seen at pro-life rallies like lots of signs say, we're pro-life and NRA. Let's get out membership for the NRA. In other words, these are separate issues. You may have certain shared values among some conservatives, but they're separate issues. Here, the leftist agenda is tied in directly and inextricably with this this movement, this anti-gun legislature movement. And then the question is, okay, so what are some of the actual solutions? What do we do? What do we do practically? You don't hear a lot of that. And now it swings back the other way, so that what you end up with is extreme rhetoric on both sides. Here, let's look at another sign. This is from a teacher. I'm a 25-year-old public school teacher, and then she's got profanity. My school district won't give me the password to use Wi-Fi, yet you want me to carry a gun, and then some profanity there. Well, again, I understand the sentiments there, but no one is saying that all teachers would be required to carry guns, but that in each school you would look for qualified teachers that would probably fit a certain profile that may have some background in law enforcement or some background in being in the military or some background with guns and would gladly carry and conceal. There are schools in America where teachers conceal carry, and it's just part of the culture there. And here, just think of this for a second. You are a demented young person or older person. You are going to go into a school to carry out a mass murder. I mean, the sickness and sinfulness of that is just mind-boggling, but you're planning on doing it. And there are two school districts, School District A and School District B. School District A, this is a gun-free zone. School District B, you have armed resource officers there, or our teachers conceal and carry. Which school are you more likely to go to try to carry out your atrocities? So I'm perfectly happy to look at problems in our gun laws where we have loopholes and people getting weapons they shouldn't be able to get and ask questions about what weapons should be available to the general public. I'm perfectly happy to have that conversation and perfectly happy to have the conversation asking the question, should we arm our teachers? Should we have armed resources at every school? How do we reduce gun violence? We'll be right back. A whole lot more to come.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. We welcome all of our great stations throughout the DFW area. I was talking to some friends who are on the worship team of one of the largest churches in the nation based in Texas, and they were mentioning to me the couple that probably every Sunday morning 20,000 weapons pass in and out of the doors. Every day we're joking. I don't know how much hyperbole it was there, but they were just saying that lots of people are conceal and carry and people on the worship team, and they said it'd be the worst possible place for someone to come in. I mean, like many big churches, they have all kinds of security and they're very careful and things like that. You don't see it outwardly, but they've got it throughout the building. But if someone tried to go in there and pull a gun and carry out some act of violence, they'd instantly be gunned down. Now, we have a problem with gun violence in America. We have a problem in general with violence in our culture. We're entertained by violence. We're saturated with violence. The breakdown in the home, how much does it contribute to the violence? Certain weapons being available, how much does that contribute to the violence? These are the kinds of questions we need to ask. But here's my question for you. Is it helpful? What are you thinking on this? What's your take? Young people, old people alike. Is it helpful when young people, 17, 18-year-old high school students, with very, very little life experience, all right? They may have been through a lot. They may have been through hard times. They may have had to navigate the difficulties of a divorce and overcome different obstacles in their own lives, as many kids do, even younger than 17, 18. Some of them have lived through a lot. But in terms of responsible life experience where you're out in the world, where you're raising a family, where you're having to deal with life and death issues in the society around you, when you're responsible for earning a living and playing a role as a citizen, they have virtually no experience. Just recently getting driver's licenses, some of them not having worked a full-time job yet or being responsible for things outside of their own household. The question is, how much should young people be leading the way in the anti-gun movement? Young people leading the way in the March for Our Lives this Saturday. So here's an interview with one of the young men who's become a poster boy after the massacre in Parkland, Florida, David Hogg. And I pray for him. I pray that the Lord will really get hold of his life and that the zeal and passion that he has will be used to advance righteous causes, and where he's got a passion for anything right here, that'll rise to the surface. But here's some of what troubles me. I want you to hear a couple of excerpts from a recent interview he did. Listen carefully.
I think what really strikes me is that you guys are obviously doing a lot of work and a really good job of doing it. But at the same time, I'm always in the back of my mind, it's you guys are kids and there are adults that should be doing. Do you guys ever think why the are we the ones who are doing this?
Well, at this point, it's when you're your old parents, I don't know how to send an iMessage, and you're just give me the phone, and you take it, and you're okay, let me handle it, and you get it done in 1 second. Sadly, that's what we have to do with our government, because our parents don't know how to use a democracy, so we have to.
Whoa. Hang on there. Did you hear that? And of course, it's got to be bleeped out throughout because it's so profane ridden. Did you hear that? Our parents, they don't know how to send out an instant message or something. You got to show them how to use the iPad or the cell phone. They're so stupid. They are so stupid and ignorant, that stupid, ignorant, older generation. We have to show them how to do a text. They can't figure out, I'm an older person. I'm 40 years old. I'm 60 years old. I don't know how to use the iPad. I can't text. How do you send an instant message again on Twitter? What is a direct message? How do I do that? I'm just a stupid old person. And then the 15-year-old says, I'll show you, Mom, how to do it. I'll show you, Dad. And in 30 seconds, they sent that photo out. No, that's the same way with parents. They don't know how to run a democracy. They don't know how to run a country. We got to stand up and fix it. That is nothing other than youthful ignorance. Shall I repeat it? Youthful ignorance mixed with youthful arrogance. And all of us who are older can say, oh, I was there. Most of us, many of us, especially those of us who were rebels in our teen years, I was there despising the older generation. What does the older generation know? And we've got it all figured out. Now, listen, there are plenty of things that young people see that old people miss, and plenty of things that middle-aged people see that young people miss, and old people see that middle-aged people miss. We all have our blind spots. We all have our cultural weaknesses, but there is a reason that human beings develop and grow and mature and then are given certain responsibilities. There is a reason you have to be a certain age before you can be the president of the United States, or a certain age before you can be elected as some officials. You say, yeah, well, they're sending us off to war at 18. Okay, well, you can vote at 18 also. And yeah, if you can be sent to the front lines of battle, then you should be able to vote. I agree with that. But there is a reason that you can't be a five-star general at the age of 18. There is a reason that a girl 10 years old can't be married with four children that she's conceived because she is not ready, and the body takes a while to develop in the mind and life experience. And then you find out, what do you find out when you have your first kids? My parents were smarter than I realized. What do you find out when you have your first financial crisis because of misspending? What do you find out when you have your first life issues? You really need some help. And when do you go from thinking your parents were idiots to thinking your parents were geniuses? Those of you that were raised in good homes. Look, during the Vietnam War, John Lennon asked the question, well, we've declared war, why don't we just declare peace? If it was that easily done, fine. You got some warmongers? You got some hawks, and they just live for the moment to drop bombs and kill people. That's not most people in the military. Most people in the military are not just itching for the moment where they can go out and start killing people and risk their own lives to do it. Yeah, you have some that are doing it, all right? But there are plenty of generals that are looking, okay, well, we've got to weigh the loss of life, and we've got a political issue here, but you got to weigh it out. And that's why they're at a certain point. Very few just can't wait to destroy people, but you can't just simply say, we declare peace. All right, let's just do it. I'm a radio host. I have a voice. I'm live on internet right now as well. I declare an end to gun violence in America, and I declare peace. You can no more do that over the radio and over the internet than you can have two political leaders just say, we declare peace. And everybody just says, okay, and all the countries live happily ever after. In the same way here, young people say, well, my parents, older generation, they don't know how to send out a text message. They don't know how to run the country. That is youthful ignorance and youthful arrogance, and it's fueled by anger as well. And the last thing we need to do is put those voices at the forefront. It is foolishness. Foolishness. Think of how people's views are changed. You go to college and you sit in college classes and you hear your professors talk and your views get totally changed in a short period of time. Totally changed. Why? Because you're just forming your views. And now you're being influenced by these other people and you're out of the home and a new environment for the first time. And now you may look back 20, 30 years later and think, yikes, how did I hold to those views? You know, there's the old adage, which is quite exaggerated, but the old adage, if you're not a liberal when you're a young person, you don't have a heart. If you're not a conservative when you're an older person, you don't have a mind. Well, that's an exaggerated adage, but there's something to it. And it's heart and mind that are needed together to sort out some of the issues in society. Here's another clip from this interview with David Hogg. Listen to what he has to say.
What sick are out there that want to continue to sell more guns, murder more children, and honestly just get reelected? What type of person are you when you want to see more money than children's lives? What type of person does that?
All right, first, again, that's the foolishness of youth to think you're doing interviews and you're going to talk certain ways and just use all the profanity. Well, yeah, look, I know there's some famous podcasts and big names and that are as profane as could be, but okay, that's one thing. It's going to cut back on some of your listeners, but here's the bigger thing. David, and others like David, young people, old people, do you really think that there are politicians out there who say it's more important to me to have money in my coffers from the NRA than to care about the lives of children? Maybe there's some. Maybe there's some that are that hard, that are that callous, that are that indifferent. But that is certainly anything but the norm. And there are plenty of politicians that care deeply about human life, that care deeply about children's lives, who are as shocked and saddened by the Parkland tragedy and other tragedies as any other American, and yet for pragmatic reasons, they believe in our Second Amendment rights and don't want the government to be able to confiscate guns of law-abiding citizens. And will point out that most of the violence comes in the cities that have the strictest gun control laws, which means we have a larger problem to address. You may have a different answer to the question, a different solution to the problem. That's fine. But this type of rhetoric is utterly unhelpful and should be pushed to the back. You say, you're giving me prominence. I'm giving you prominence to dismiss it. Here's a clip from the March for Our Lives. Martin Luther King's granddaughter, just a sweet, sweet little girl in terms of just, I don't know her at all, but just watching this, she looks like a sweet, sweet little girl. Listen to what she said.
My grandfather had a dream that his four little children will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that enough is enough. And that this should be a gun-free world, period.
Okay, so here's my question. 9 years old, adorable little kid, right? Yeah, it'd be wonderful if you had a world where nobody killed each other and a world where nobody hurt each other. For that matter, a knife-free world, a violence-free world, that nobody needed a gun except to go hunting, and nobody needed a knife except to skin an animal that was killed, or whatever. But what in the world does that have to do with reality? 9 years old, granddaughter of Martin Luther King. What in the world does that have to do with solving the problem? Nothing. Zero.
But if you don't agree, you're an angry NRA Republican bloodthirsty, on and on.
We'll be right back with your calls.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What I find interesting is I saw a recent poll that was done getting the viewpoint of young people in America about guns, gun violence, and it was pretty similar to the older generation. In other words, the March for Our Lives did not reflect necessarily what the majority of young people in America are feeling, but there is a leftist agenda that is radically anti-gun. And my problem is you've got a radical left and a radical right, and then you've got partisan politics mixed in. I'm concerned that we will never sit down, or not for years, no matter how much blood is shed, and try to be constructive rather than emotional, rather than appealing to victimhood, rather than irrational appeals from a nine-year-old. It seems real for a nine-year-old. I don't mean it's irrational for her to say, let's have a gun-free world. It's just irrational in terms of it ain't going to happen with human beings on the planet. Not going to happen. 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a couple of quotes from the article that I wrote over the weekend. I'll read them to you in a moment. But let's go to the phones first in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Andrew, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
All right. I would like to make a call about this topic because you kind of confirmed what I was feeling on about this because, well, I'm in my mid-20s right now, and on the one hand, I'm glad to see so many people speaking out against the violence in our country, and my heart does go out to people who were affected by this, and yes, I also agree that kids should be safe going to school. However, there was a part of me that felt kind of uneasy about some of it, because there was like a bit of anti-Christian stuff about, you know, Planned Parenthood and even marriage equality and all that sometimes there. And when you talked about that just now, it kind of confirmed how I was feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And Andrew, look, again, it's good that people get motivated to do something rather than sitting on their hands. It's good that young people say, hey, this affects us personally. These are our schools. These are our lives. It's our blood in the hallways. And we are crying out for politicians to do something and stop being so political. I'm all for that. But when you have, as you mentioned, Planned Parenthood sponsoring the event, when this is tied in with, as one reporter said, the pink hats from the anti-Trump marches, the women's marches, were appearing all over the place, that it was heavily politicized and heavily, what's the word, rhetorized, whatever the right word is. It was so rhetorically driven and emotionally driven and even irrationally driven and anger driven and partisan politic driven that you're not going to have a lot of practical discussion that comes out of that. So Andrew, as a young man yourself, I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate you sharing that perspective. That's why I wrote the article, why I'm not enthusiastic about the March for Our Lives. And I don't know this. Maybe anyone have information on this? Let me know. You can post it on our screen for YouTube or on our Facebook live feed, or you can call in if you have this information. But the naming of it, the March for Our Lives, does anyone know where that came from? Was it playing off the March for Life? Was it intentionally playing off the March for Life? And thank you for the call, Andrew. I looked for this briefly. I was ministering in Tampa, Florida over the weekend and pretty much through the day yesterday, so I didn't have a chance to look for this in depth. I didn't see anything initially. But was it just, hey, a spontaneous name, the March for Our Lives, and came that works. Was it meant specifically as a contrast with the March for Life, which has been now the largest civil rights march in our history every year for over 40 years now, since Roe v. Wade in 1973? So what, 44 years running? Was it in contrast to that? Was it a challenge to conservative Christians who were associated with being pro-gun and pro-life, and I'm going to be pro-gun and pro-life? Or was it just, yeah, it's a good name, it works. But here, let me share two quotes with you that to me represent the extremes on both sides, okay? This was March 2nd, op-ed piece in the New York Times. It claimed that, quote, the students of Parkland are like veterans coming home from the bloody front of the NRA's de facto war on children. They've seen their friends, teachers, and coaches gunned down in the halls. To them, powerful Washington lobbyists and United States senators suddenly look like what they are, cheesy TV spokesmodels for murder weapons. It has been inspiring and thrilling to watch furious, clear-eyed teenagers shame and vilify gutless politicians and soul-dead lobbyists for their complicity in the murders of their friends. Last week, Wayne LaPierre was reduced to gibbering like General Jack D. Ripper in Dr. Strangelove about a socialist takeover and hardening our schools. You could see the whites all around his irises. That look is fear. That's on the one side. To me, that's the strong left or radical left speaking and making this into a war, the NRA against the children of America, etc. But the NRA's post on Facebook over the weekend, to me, represents the other side, which is equally unhelpful. The NRA posted this on Facebook in response to the March for Our Lives. Quote, today's protests aren't spontaneous. Gun-hating billionaires and Hollywood elites are manipulating and exploiting children as part of their plan to destroy, all caps, the Second Amendment and strip us of our right to defend ourselves and our loved ones. Okay. Yes, that is accurate to a point, as the first quote was accurate to a point, and then it gets exaggerated. In other words, what you hear, here's what I look at. You have to separate the radical left players and the radical right players. You have to separate the people who have vested interest in a position. You have to separate that which is driven by the media, that which is driven by Hollywood elites, that which is driven by political strongholds on either side. You have to move all that out of the way. You have to separate how some young people are being used by others with certain causes to get a voice. And listen, Fox News is playing clips of Kyle Kashuv, another survivor from the Parkland massacre, who's speaking out on the exact opposite side of things and with a very different tone, said in David Hogg, and said, okay, let's debate it. Two young men, 17, 18 years old, survivors of the Parkland massacre, and they were at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School and day of the shooting, traumatized by it like everyone else, but two very different views. Okay, so the right's putting forth their people and the left putting forth theirs, and Emma Gonzalez and these others and putting them forth. And oh, okay, so let's separate all that, and now let's talk issue. Why is it so hard when we're talking about a real problem in America? You say, well, the big problem is guns in the hands of the wrong people, and that's why we have so much violence in our gun-free zones in the cities with the strictest gun control laws. They have the most violence. Oh, okay, well, why is that? And how is it in some other cities in the world that have strict gun control laws? You don't have that violence. How are the guns getting into people's hands? These, to me, are valid questions to ask. Is there a universal gun registry that would better catch people? Are there ways to close the loopholes that allowed for Nicholas Cruz to get weapons in Florida? And again, that's a matter of law enforcement not doing its job. All I'm appealing for is not a partisan position. It is not a pro-NRA position, and it is not an anti-gun position. All I'm appealing for and continue to appeal for is let's get past the emotional rhetoric. Let's get past the anger and the victimhood and the irrational responses. Let's get past the attack on the older generation. Let's get past these broad, mudslinging, slanderous assaults. And let's talk and say, how many agree that we have a problem with gun violence in America? Okay, everybody's hands raised. Okay. How many agree the Second Amendment's important? Okay, great. What are we going to do then to address the problem? And have we gone beyond the intention of the Second Amendment? If you can't ask that question, then you're not going to have a rational answer either. Have we gone beyond what the Second Amendment intended? That's a fair question to ask, isn't it? Another fair question to ask is lawful weapons in the hands of lawful people the problem, or is it something else? Is there another problem? Are there other issues? That's all I'm pleading for. It's pretty simple. It's pretty basic. And I'm hoping that as those that come together regularly around the Line of Fire broadcast, we can have some civil, constructive discussion and set a good example for the rest of the country. Hey, friends, have you checked out the update video that we posted on our GoFundMe page? Oh, it's really cool because the desk I'm sitting in right here, you see what I'm looking at. You see the screens. You see the various monitors. You see how we do what we do. We go into our studio right across from me, right, just a few feet away from me. We've got our producers working there and putting clips together and playing those for you. Take a moment. Go to GoFundMe.com/AskDrBrownStudio. GoFundMe.com/ASKDR Brown Studio. Take, 3 minutes? Watch the video. You'll really enjoy it. And then if we've been a blessing to you, stand with us. Enable us to reach more people more effectively. All right, we've had our talk about guns today. We move on to something new tomorrow.